Malcolm's death, I went to Hawaii with my brother and did a little nightclub singing. It paid the rent, but I still wasn't happy or content. I would never be a great singer, and I didn't love singing. So I made a decision. I would return to the mainland, to California, and search until I found something I loved doing. I had begun writing a stage play, and I had a notebook full of poems. I could polish them up a little, present them to a publisher, and pray a lot. In Los Angeles, I rented a small, dark apartment and painted every inch of the visible walls and the entire floor bone white. I had a house. Now, I needed to earn some money, so I got a job.
Good morning. I am working for a company called Random Research, and they want to improve the quality of the goods you buy.
The salary was pitifully low, but the job was simple, and it allowed me time to think and develop my play. Watts was my assigned locale. A black neighborhood, with once an air of studied grace, now lost, whose gardens were still tidy, but whose men had no jobs and were lounging on front porches and steps. I directed my questions to the women.
May I ask you a few questions? Your answers will ensure you will find better foods in your supermarket and probably at a reduced price.
What questions?
Well, what cereal does your family prefer? And, what soap powder do you
use? Not today, thank you. Goodbye.
The person who wrote those lines for us to say knew nothing of black women. They know that the world is not much concerned with the quality of their lives, or even their lives at all.
I'm sorry. May I try again? I have a job asking questions.
I knew a straight back and straight talk would get the black woman's attention every time.
There are some companies that want to know which products are popular in the black community and which are not.
Why do they care?
They care because if you don't like what they are selling, you won't buy it, and they want to fix it so you do.
That makes sense. Come on in.
The women range from college graduates to those who would find it challenging to read the daily newspaper. Some would say,
my husband ain't home. I don't know where he's spending his time. He's not working. Makes me a little suspicious.
Whilst others said,
with him not working, I'm home all day and I'm tripping over him and his friends.
The women opened their doors and their minds to me. I found hardworking and hard-thinking women, and the burden of their conversation was always the same.
The public transport's so bad. If I want to get to work at 8:30, I have to leave home at 5. I buy my groceries near where I work, because the food here in Watts costs more and it ain't as good.
Indirectly through them, I met their men.
They ain't breadwinners no more. They ain't no jobs no
way. Fact is, without work and regular money coming in, I can't see no kind of future for any of us.
Furious with themselves and each other, the men and women began to abandon their children, and those bootless children, without the steadying hand of a parent who cared, left school and began to run like young tigers in the streets of Watts, growing bolder and angrier every day. The sounds when they came were clear, fast, and furious. But the uproar in Watts taught me something I had not known. Odor travels faster and farther than sound. Burning wood first, then the smell of scorched food, the stench of smoldering rubber. All of these an hour before the news caught up.
There is a full-blown riot in Watts. Watts is an area in southeast Los Angeles. Its residents are predominantly Negroes. The police have been deployed and have stated that we have nothing to fear and that in a few hours they will have everything under control.
Those of us who watched the action live on television over the next few days knew that the officials were talking through their hats. Political analysts observed that the people were burning their own neighborhoods. The rioters considered the stores the property of the colonialists who had come into their neighborhood to exploit them and take their hard-earned money. 2 days passed, and I could wait no longer. I needed to see for myself. The smell was putrid, as plastic furniture and supermarket meat smoldered. People pushed piled high store carts out of burning buildings. Police seemed to be everywhere and nowhere, watching from inside their cars.
You want a radio?
What? No!
There was no guilt in his voice, as though we were in this together.
There's plenty more!
The further I walked into the smoke, the more difficult it was to breathe. I turned to go. Policemen in gas masks emerged out of the smoke. Figures from a nightmare. Terrified, I started to run. They grabbed a man in front of me.
Get off! Come here! Take your hands off me, pig! Let me go! Let me go right now! Let me go right now!
I couldn't see the pavement. My lungs were going to burst, my calves were cramping, but I pushed myself along. Someone grabbed for me. I shrugged off the hand and continued running. I was still running when I realized I was breathing clean air. When I returned home, the television coverage was mesmerizing. The National Guard arrived in Watts. Rumors were that police were arresting anyone black and those suspected of being black. Watts went on burning. 2 days after my tentative foray into the war zone, I had to go again. This time, I would not run. The devastation of burnt cars and buildings was so much broader. Armed civilians stood in front of ravaged businesses, as did the National Guard.
Hey, man, Mr. National Guardsman, what you got in the pawn shop for? That stuff was already stolen in the first place.
That evening, I sat down at my kitchen table and wrote on a yellow pad.
Your friend Charlie Pawnshop was a glorious blaze. I heard the flames lick, then eat the trays of zircons, mounted in red gold alloys, Easter clothes and stolen furs, burned in the attic, radios and TVs crackled with static, plugged in only to racial outlets. Policemen caught in their brand new cars. Chugga, 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 get me one nigger. Looting and burning, he won't get far. Screeching nerves, exploding minds. Lives tied to a policeman's whistle. A welfare worker's doorbell finger.
I had returned to Watts, ready to be arrested. On this visit, neither the looters, the police, the spectators, nor the National Guard took notice of me.
Come on, keep them moving. Hold on there.
Arrested men were marched in chains, close enough for me to touch them. The havoc now had areas of calm. People sifted through the debris. A woman smiled with pleasure when she found a matched pair of shoes. Older citizens were spent, and I read the sadness and futility on their faces. I headed home with an equal mixture of disappointment and grief. The ash had not settled before the streets were filled with tourists and journalists from around the world, all asking the same questions.
We want a medical clinic so that sick people don't have to travel 2 to 3 hours to see a doctor.
Yeah.
We want jobs for the unemployed.
Yeah.
We want better jobs for the employed.
Yeah.
We be standing out here for now. This is what we want.
34 people died. Most were black citizens. 2 policemen and 1 firefighter were amongst the casualties. Most of the deaths were caused by the Los Angeles police or National Guards and were deemed by the authorities as justifiable homicides. Suggestions were made to improve schools, employment, housing, healthcare, and relations with the police department. There was little follow-up. Sid's Cafe and Bar was a popular hangout. The owners were highly respected cooks of Louisiana food and liked and welcomed me. So Sid's became my base. One evening, a group of four in the red booth at the front of the cafe were particularly interesting.
Hey, you alone?
Yes.
Well, join us. Are you from New Orleans?
No.
Well, we are. Where did you run away from?
I came here from Hawaii, and before that, San Francisco, and before that, Ghana in West Africa.
Hey, all right. You fit right in with me. I'm one crazy lying nigga, too. My name is Phil. What's yours?
My name is Maya, and I am neither a nigga or a liar.
I don't mean any harm. You sound like a little teacher I had in Baton Rouge.
I thought you were from New Orleans.
Told you I was a lying nigga. I can be ornery, too.
Then maybe I better go back to my table.
No, stay. Don't mind Phil. He says these things, but he don't mean any harm.
I enjoyed the group's company, and after a while, Phil used the racial slur less. One morning, he suggested we all go for a ride. We piled into Phil's run-down old car.
Oh, James, don't spare the horses! Driver, follow that cab!
We were in high spirits as we crossed railroad tracks. Then, Phil stopped the car.
What the hell?
I couldn't see the train, but judging by the sound of its whistle, it was just around a curve in the tracks.
Move the car! Move the damn car! You're gonna get us killed!
He drove the car off the tracks. Seconds later, the train sped behind us.
You all right, Maya?
Phil stopped the car on the corner by my house.
You want to get out here?
He must have known I had been scared enough to pee on myself. I crossed the street in front of the car to give him a good chance to see me.
I scared the piss out of her. Look, Maya, come back and clean up my car. Come back. I won't do it again.
In my house, I showered, and the terror released in me. In clean, dry clothes, I remembered Phil's self-description when I first met him. I had learned one important lesson. Believe people when they tell you who they are. They know themselves better than you.
Hello?
Is this my Maya? Maya, speak to me. This is your husband.
He wasn't my husband, but he was a great love and my greatest fear, and I had left him in Africa.
Hello, Shekali.
I am in New York City. I've come to the States to collect you. God gave you to me, remember?
He had taken the heart out of my body and worn it boldly on his shoulder like an epaulette, and I had adored him.
Are you really in New York City?
I am coming to California to collect you and to take you back to Africa.